If you have a financial question for Pager Bruce, you can call this number 24/7. Keep in mind 1-888-6-ADVICE. And you can also email those questions as well. Just send them to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But in the meantime, we urge you to call or text our studio line right now during the show at 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Once again, here is Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Peg Webb. Good morning, my old friend, the ageless, legendary Denny Long. Good to be with you, my friend. Hey, Denny, and listeners, Peg and I today, and we'll definitely have plenty of time for questions from listeners today. We got some things we definitely want to go over, but I don't think, Peg, this is going to be a particularly lengthy discussion on our topic today. But, Peg, you know, and Denny, as I get older, time just seems to go faster and faster. So, Peg, when I saw what we were going to talk about today, we were calling the show Smart Year-End Tax Planning Moves. My first thought was, what do you mean year-end? It's not year-end, but we're in the fourth quarter. We're over halfway through October, and I just don't know where the time went. So what we're going to talk about today are some things that you can still do to help your tax situation for 2025. Peg and I often on the show talk about being more proactive, and you know, maybe right now, ideally, you'd be planning for 2026, but there's still things that it's not too late to do for 2025, and that's what we're going to focus on today, Peg.
Yes, and there is quite a bit to talk about. Here's what's interesting is I'm one of those people that gets an extension on my taxes, so I just filed them on October 15th. So think about the fact that we're thinking about next, you know, this year's taxes when I just, you know, sent in the other one. So, but in our business, taxes matter no matter what you do. And so we like to encourage our clients to be proactive and ask questions. And so we've broken it down here a little bit by if your income is higher, what should you do? And if your income is lower, what should you do yet this year? So let's start with income is higher. So a lot of you out there are employed. And you have maybe a 401k. And the suggestion would be maybe you max out your tax-deferred contributions in your company plan because that automatically will deduct that those dollars from your income tax. Now, it's a little bit tricky because the corporations now are offering us a choice. You can choose to tax-defer or you could choose to do a Roth contribution within your company plan. You know, that is actually, it's taxable. And by the way, people who have a higher income starting next year are going to be forced to put some of the money into Roth IRA through your company plan. So keep that in mind too. But tax deferral, you and I, Bruce, we kind of discourage doing all tax deferral over your working lifetime because then you have this huge bucket of IOU to the IRS. So just keep that in mind. Tax loss harvesting. Well, here we are. The markets have done so well, and maybe you don't have a single stock or something that has a loss this year. But if you do, you might take a look at selling that position that's at a loss, and that would help you on your taxes. Now, we all can take up to 3,000 losses on our income tax form. But yet, if you have some gains, which a lot of you out there probably do because the market's been so good, you could offset those losses. So look into that. Then itemizing. So here now, because of these tax law changes, and we went over that with the changes with the Trump administration recently, a lot of you may itemize. And there was so many people that just said, I'm never going to itemize again. But now you can accelerate deductions and maybe you'll actually get to do the itemization and that might work for you, especially if you're in higher income. So you could prepay property taxes. You could prepay state income taxes. You could give charitable gifts of a sizable amount. So that's all new for 2025, and more people will probably itemize versus just taking the standard. And then lastly, charitable giving. I can't help but say that, but there's so many people, especially in the Midwest, which Minnesota, your heartstrings are just so high with giving and giving. And so you actually get a deduction on your income tax for giving gifts to the organizations that you love. So, and there's several ways to do that, but check with your advisor, because you could take the money out of your IRA directly and go to a charity, or you may want to do a bigger gift of low basis stock, or you may just want to give cash or certain items and itemize that particular year. So, Bruce, that's a lot, but that is for the people who have income that's a little bit high.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you, and I think you kind of beat me to the punch, if the one big beautiful, act it changes anything. And I think you already kind of hit on the big one. That's the idea that at least for this year, our state and local taxes, the amount was greatly increased, what we could deduct compared to past years. And a lot of people that maybe in recent years have just been taking the standard deduction might need to look at whether or not they can itemize again. That's probably the big one. Are there other things that the new tax law did to impact people, Peg, off the top of your head?
Well, there's that super bonus, they're calling it the senior bonus, where you get $6,000 per person. That's actually a pretty big deal. So you may be able to do some more tax planning this year because that's some added deductions for you.
So you gave a lot of good stuff if your income was higher. What if your income is a little bit lower in 2025?
Yeah. So if you're low, I mean, I'm going to sound like I'm repeating the same thing, but we've all made money in the stock market. And we have lots of capital gains right now. We're not talking about retirement plans where you're deferring it because that all will be taxable. But if you went out and bought some portfolio that has stock-related investments in it, it probably has some gains. So if this year might be lower, you may want to sell some of those appreciated assets and take some of those capital gains. They didn't change the brackets for capital gains, so you still have this lower bracket of 0 to 15%, and a lot of people miss that because they feel like they're going to pay 15% no matter what. That's not true. There's a amount there that you can take, and some of our clients actually hit zero because they don't have a lot of other income. Roth conversions. We probably talk about this we talk about it all the time and maybe not enough. The fact that you could get some of those taxable IRAs outside of the taxes, pay the taxes now because it's going to be less, and then have repositioned to something that will grow in the future tax-free if you follow all the rules. They have on here to adjust withholding. Now, that might be too late this year, but 2025 and 2026 should be very similar, except for depending on your income. But you may not have paid enough in withholding, or maybe you paid too much. And here they're just suggesting if you have the IRS holding money that you would otherwise have in your bank, we're making money on our money still when we are in the bank. So you may want to just look at, am I overpaying for the 2025 tax return? And then a few things are these credits. There's maximizing child care, elder care, education, earned income tax credits. All of those things, if you're eligible, they will show up when you go to the tax person or if you do it yourself in 2026 and you don't prepare. But yet it's still good to know today what kind of credits are you going to get off your tax return, because then you can use some of the strategies that I just talked about and maybe raise your income a little bit more. Bruce?
So a couple things. There might be listeners going, you know, we're talking about if your income is higher, if your income is lower. For a lot of people, you know, the paycheck is the paycheck, and they make kind of the same every year, maybe with some minor cost of living, you know, adjustments or raises. So they might not know what we're talking about, but there's a lot of people, Peg, that their compensation may include bonuses or income from investments. And whether your income is higher or lower, sometimes you might have some control over that. So one of the planning things that we do is, you know, we help our clients, if they have a choice when they recognize the income, if it's going to be late in 25 or early in 26, we can help them determine, you know, what's the best way to take that income if you have some choices. But the other thing I wanted to mention really quickly, you gave a bunch of headlines, really good stuff, on if your income is higher or if your income is lower. But on every one of those headlines, Peg, we could dig a lot deeper. I mean, we literally could talk about this for hours. Unfortunately, we only have an hour program. But even the one, you know, that kind of struck me, the charitable giving, you know, you've talked about, you know, giving, you know, appreciated assets versus cash. We talk about donor advised funds. We talk about qualified charitable distribution. So if you're going to be generous anyway, and that's why most people do their charitable giving, they're not doing it to get a tax break, but if you can get a tax benefit for your generosity, why not do that? So again, part of the comprehensive financial planning process that we help people with is to maximize the efficiency of things that they want to do anyway, like the charitable giving. So we talked about if your income is higher, if your income is lower, and how people might act a little bit differently. What are some general things that probably are universally applicable to everybody, Peg?
Yeah, so if you're 70 and a half and now the new rule is 73 with your required minimum distribution. So if indeed you do not take it, there actually is a penalty. And we do a really good job with our clients and cautioning them about, you know, taking it and you have to make sure you avoid these penalties. And a lot of times, over my career, people, they forget. I even tell them they have to go do it because the holding isn't with me. And I suggested that they go sell out of this plan that they have outside of me. And so if they didn't do it, and I've had people forget, then they get a penalty. Then we work with the client to try to get their penalty money, just telling them that they just were aloof and forgot. But that's a big deal to avoid the penalty. Plan for big transactions. So if you have an investment property or you sold a business or, you know, you sold your house, and there's so much complexity. I don't know if you've all looked at the IRS book of things to look up. There's so much complexity in tax. And Bruce, that's why we at Wealth Enhancement Group, taxes matter in everything you do. Yes, we build portfolios and we coach you on investments. But if you don't have somebody that's knowledgeable about taxes, you know, you're going to lose a lot of the great things that you have done. So there's a lot of complex things. So do that. Do research that. Medical expenses, I find that very few people get to deduct those expenses. So even though we're encouraging a lot of people to do the itemized return this year, when you go and try to figure out your medical deductions, you'll find that the government, you know, has a formula of like 7.5% of what you actually spent. And many, many people aren't able to itemize very many medical expenses. And then I'll just focus 1 minute on the new the tax that we can property taxes, home taxes, you know, those kinds of things. We get up to $40,000 in 2025 and for the next 5 years. So if you're one of those people, that's a huge deduction, which then makes you say, oh, how many other deductions can I have on my itemization sheet because you hadn't done it in the last previous years because you weren't eligible. There was a cap of 10,000. So those are some of the things that we're highlighting for our clients these days, Bruce.
Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to put in a plug for Wealth Enhancement, but the required minimum distribution, Peg, you mentioned that you've had clients forget before. I have too. And one of the reasons I know that a lot of people like to consolidate and move all their assets to us is the fact that we are proactive, and we tell clients when they have to take a required minimum distribution, how much they have to take. We do the calculation and then where to take it from. But we can only provide that service if all their tax deferred accounts that are subjected to RMDs are here. If they've got money at other places, we can't control that. I'm like you. I remind them, don't forget about those other IRAs that aren't here. But sometimes I have had clients miss it. So it's really kind of a benefit. It's a win-win, win for us, win for them. If they consolidate assets and get them here, then they don't have to worry about RMDs. So a lot of things yet, Peg. That was a lot of things yet that people can do between now and the end of the year and still make a difference in 2025. What about small business owners and the like? What are some other things that we can touch on for those folks?
Yeah, there's this thing called bonus depreciation in Section 179. And what that is if you own a business, you can deduct the full purchase price of like equipment that you bought or even software for the business. So because things change so fast, and I will talk about the software part of it, that's changed dramatically. And so if you invest in your business, there's a huge deduction for accelerating purchases this particular year. So business people take note of that. Deferred bonuses. But Bruce, you mentioned something about highly compensated and the bonuses people may get. A lot of times you get those and you're like, oh, no, that's all taxable. But there may be a way to push that compensation into a different year. I'm not a huge fan of that because I think that the tax laws that are new here now are going to be here the next couple of years. So pushing something into next year, you'd almost have to do a tax return mock-up to see if you really would win by pushing things like that. Stock option planning, people have stock within their company. Maybe the company gave it as a bonus, something like that. And it's going to pay out this particular year. That too, maybe you can choose, and a lot of times you can, whether you want to do it in 2025 or push it to 2026 or maybe beyond. Because a lot of these stock options, they don't actually make you do it each and every year. So the next one is kind of complicated, but yet I've utilized this quite a bit. The net unrealized appreciation. So if you have employer stock, and I had a client, they worked at Target for a very long time, and they acquired stock of Target. So you can imagine how that stock has gone up over the decades of time. And you have a choice of like pulling that stock all out of your company plan or a portion, and you can get a tax preference for doing that. It's very complicated, but if you do have company stock and it's been there a long time, check with your advisor or someone at Wealth Enhancement Group and they can help you to see if you can take advantage of that. Bruce?
Yeah, the net unrealized appreciation, it is hard to explain in a format like this. It is complicated, but it is a big deal if it applies to you. If you have a lot of company stock in your company retirement plan, don't make decisions with that plan when you leave the company without getting some guidance. Peg, I've had a lot of clients over the years that didn't know about net unrealized appreciation, and we save them a lot of dollars in taxes just with that one strategy. I remember one client in particular, I want to say we saved them like $27,000 in taxes with that strategy, and they'd never heard of it before. So that's a big one. Peg, we got just a couple minutes left. What else do you want to hit in the first half and the second half? Will be mostly listeners' questions, but what else do you want to get to?
Well, the other one, when it comes to businesses and compensation, the new deduction of no tax on tips and overtime, there's been a lot more detail that's come out. It was a little fuzzy in the beginning of, who qualifies, how much do you qualify for, what counts as far as a tip and overtime. So if you're one of those people, I would also get somebody to, I can't suggest this more than I'm going to say right now. You can do pretend, right? You could take 2024's taxes, the form, and fill in 2025, because there's not a lot of changes. I mean, there is some, but you should be able to do some kind of mock-up with pretending that you're doing 2025. That actually helps people. And we do that for some of our clients, and you may want to talk to your CPA before year end, Bruce.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice. So, Danny, I think we've got about a minute or so left. When we come back from the break, Peg and I will tie a bow on the topic. We'll text each other here offline, see if there's anything else we want to hit. But most of the second half of the show, we can let listeners drive and talk about what they want to talk about.
Very good, Bruce. In fact, we're already getting a bunch of text messages, and if you want to be one of them, all you have to do is either phone call or text us at 651-461-9226. Again, if you want to make it a phone call, great. If you want to make it a text, that's easy too. 651-461-9226. We'll be back on the other side welcoming your calls and text with more of your money here. Stay with us. If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, you can call this number 24/7, keep in mind. That's 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, during our show, we urge you to call or text our studio line at 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Danny Long. Thank you, listeners, for hanging in there. If you joined us late, Peg and I have been talking about some tax planning strategies to still help you in 2025. Sooner than later, we'll also be doing more shows talking about planning for 2026. But Peg, we talked about a bunch of things in the first half of the show of things that people can do yet in 2025, if your income's higher, if it's lower, or some things that just apply to everybody. You talked a little bit about compensation strategies and small business. There's a couple other things we didn't get to, though. Specifically, there's some opportunities with regard to education and estate tax planning. Peg?
Yeah, with education, there's tax credits, and they've been around for a long time, American Opportunity Credit and Lifetime Learning Credit, but they increase the amounts. And so check into that if you're one of those people. Your CPA or your accountant or your advisor will coach you on making sure that you take that. 529 plans, we're a big fan of contributing if it makes sense for you, your children, your grandchildren. We talk about those all the time. And could this be a good time, you know, to start contributing or add to your portfolios? Then there's this thing called the student loan interest deduction that also has been around, but the dollars are more. It's up to $2,500 per student if your income's under $95,000 single and $195,000 joint. So take a look at those educational related planning things you can do. Then lastly, there was estate and gift tax planning. Everybody was wondering, what is it, the amount that I can die with? Well, it ended up $15 million a piece. So what that means is that you could, if you're a couple, you would have $30 million of your net worth that wouldn't be subject to an estate tax. And when I say that, I mean E-S-T-A-T-E, estate tax. So there's other things you could do, though. You could gift cash, you could gift stock, you could change properties. Once again, just work with your accountant or your, you know, advisor that is well-rounded. And at Wealth Enhancement Group, we have this whole round table. So I can't sit here and tell you every detail about all of these different tax plannings, because I use the resources at Wealth Enhancement Group to get the answers that we're looking for. I can't possibly know it all. So there's a lot of other things that you could do estate planning wise and gifting. So many of our clients are so generous with their family in gifting, but make sure that you're following all the rules. So, Bruce, those were the last things that I wanted to quickly get in.
Well, I'm glad you did that. And the only thing I would add is with regard to the estate tax exclusion, the $15 million per person, I want to emphasize that's federally. That's at the federal level. Depending upon the state where you live, there may be a state estate tax. I live in the state of Minnesota. In the state of Minnesota, that exclusion is set at only $3 million, not $15. So it's possible that you might not be in any danger upon your passing, that your family is going to have any federal estate taxes, but they might have state estate taxes. In fact, I always tell my clients, estate taxes are a voluntary tax. You only pay it if you don't plan for it. We can plan for it in advance to make sure that the next generation is not going to suffer from high estate taxes. You just have to be proactive and plan for it. So we talked about a lot of stuff, Peg, and again, a lot of these things, we just gave the headline, and you can dive in deeper on all these topics, but again, we don't have the time to do that today. But I would tell people, if you tax planning is very personal, right? And it's nuanced, it's tricky. And it's time sensitive. If you want to do something to help you yet in 2025, it's time to take action right now. It's before it's too late. But we're all snowflakes. Everybody's different, so not all these strategies are applicable to everybody. So if you're confused and you're not sure, we actually have a tool that we've prepared for people. I'm going to give a phone number. It's the same one that Denny gives out all the time if people want to ask us a question. But we have we've prepared a 2025 tax planning checklist. You can get it for free, no cost, no obligation. All you have to do is call 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888. I actually figured out the numbers on this, Peg. It's 623-8423. 1-888-623-8423 or 888-6-ADVICE. We'll send you that tax planning checklist. And then also, Peg, we don't say this as often as we should. There's a lot of good stuff just going to our website. If you just go to wealthenhancement.com, and if you go to the Your Money section, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Free information. You don't have to be a client. Anybody can use it, wealthenhancement.com. So there's a lot of sources for you to get some information to help you dig through all this, because it can be very, very complicated and very overwhelming. Denny, let's let listeners drive the rest of the show, my friend.
Absolutely. A couple of ways to do that. You can phone in your financial question or send a text. Here is the number for either, 651-461-9226. Here's the first text came in. I inherited a small Roth IRA. Do those need to be drained within 10 years? If so, could I take it all in 1 year?
Great question. So, Peg, this is one that there's often confusion on. Because I think the reason the texter's asking this is because typically a traditional IRA that's inherited, you do have to withdraw the entire balance and deplete the value of the account over a 10-year period of time. They're saying, does that also apply to a Roth?
Yes, it actually does. You have to have the inherited Roth outside, completely out, all the dollars within 10 years. Now, you can at any time take all the money out of the Roth, and it's not taxable. But not a lot of people do that, because the Roth characteristics are that it grows tax-free. And many people that I know that inherit these, there's very few things where we get to have an investment that's tax-free and building. So, normally, what we do is we suggest that people take it out of, over a time period. And that's with the thought that the markets or whatever it's invested in will do, better than just taking it out now. Now, there's sometimes when the Roth you inherit, I've seen this where the account was so conservative. They bought treasuries or something like that because the age of the person who passed away was a lot older. And so we've shuffled those investments inside the Roth in the inherited one. If you're younger and you want to try to maximize that that account, Bruce.
I want to just take the ball and run a little farther on the last point you made, which was great. Yeah, the way that we're recommending an investment for one person, and now you inherit that money from that person and you're 25 or 30 or 40 years younger, we're not going to recommend the same investment strategy for you as for them. So we're going to change the investments. But I also love what you said, Peg, about most people not wanting to take that lump sum, although some people do. And then finally, the other reason I think it gets confusing is because, again, traditional IRA is subjected to this required minimum distribution. For many of us, that's going to happen at age 73. But if we have Roth IRA, we have no such mandate. We don't have to start to spend it at 73. We can let that continue to grow. I can be 75, I can be 80, still have my Roth IRA, not take any withdrawals. But when I pass away and I leave that to somebody else, then they do have to take it. And that, I think, is sometimes confuses people because they go, I thought there was no required minimum distribution on a Roth. Well, there's not to the Roth holder while they're alive, but there is to the recipient or the person that receives that Roth inheritance after the first person passes away. So it gets tricky. Danny?
This text comes from Jean. She says, I plan to give my, and this is for her tax purposes, I plan to give my car to one of my children soon. Do you think it's better to give it or sell it for a dollar like someone once told me?
Hey, Gene, great question. So, Peg, I really have to defer to you on this because, again, I've heard those stories, too, about selling an asset for a very, very low price, but I think there's rules and regulations around that, too, that the IRS might object to. But compare and contrast selling something for less than market value to a loved one versus just making a gift of that asset.
Yes, that's if you're above the board, right, and you're following all the rules, then what you can do is you can gift that car. Remember, we all have $19,000 that we can gift somebody, and a car as a gift, you know, would be something that you would, you know, you're able to gift it without having any consequences there. If you sold it for a dollar, and you know, we're on live radio, you technically you shouldn't do that because there's just a lot of complexity to that. And some people would say to me, oh, I don't know if anybody will ever find out. Well, you know what? I actually transferred a car recently and I had to go to the, you know, Hennepin County place and I had to tell them what the value was. And they needed to see my, what do you call that? You have it in the glove box, you know, all the details about the car. And I had to look up the face value of what that car is worth that particular time. And the people at the Hennepin County were very knowledgeable and said, okay, now, you know, you're going to have to list that as a gift. And that's what I did. So I personally have done that recently, but I'm not so familiar with this dollar idea that people were doing. But Bruce, you said you've heard about that before.
Yeah, I've heard those stories. I've never encountered it personally, but I think, you know, if one of our tax people was actually here with us, they might know where the line is drawn. I think you can sell an asset for a little bit less than its appraised value or the fair market value. I think there's some wiggle room there, but you can't sell a $25,000 or $30,000 car for a dollar. That's a fraudulent transaction. I think you could sell a $25,000 car for $24,000 or $23,000, but again, I'm not sure where the line is where the IRS would say, well, that's not a legal transaction. Yeah, and as far as the gifting part of it goes, you know, what's the appraised value of the car? If it's a car that's not worth that's worth less than $19,000, that would be the way to go about it. And even if it's worth a little bit more than $19,000, remember, we each can gift up to $19,000 per year per person. So if you and your spouse both want to make a $19,000 gift to somebody, that's $38,000. So there's ways to do it, but this idea of selling something of value for a dollar, I don't want to go down that road. I agree with you, Peg. Denny?
Listener says this and asks this question. Is this a good year for an IRA to a Roth conversion with the market at record highs? Listener says, I'm trying to protect my MinSure tax credits.
Oh, man, there's a couple different things in this question, Peg. So the first part of the question, when do you do Roth conversion? And there's certain times that it might make more sense than others. We look at the value of the investment. We look at the tax considerations. But then we always talk about ripple effects. Besides the income tax, there can be ripple effects. And one of those ripple effects might be if we can manipulate your taxable income down, you can be eligible for tax credits if you're paying for private health insurance. We have a lot of clients, Peg, that retire before they're 65 years old and they're not yet eligible for Medicare, and they no longer have health insurance as a company benefit, so they have private insurance. We might be able to get them tax credits. So that's a ripple effect to taxable income and whether or not Roth conversion may or may not make sense. You want to dig into that a little bit?
Yeah, whether it's an IRA conversion, because what you're doing is you're raising your taxable income, you know, by doing that. And there are strict guidelines as to, I mean, if you're $1 over, it's dramatic. So what we try to do is not take every single dollar and make sure that we are able to maximize that, because there's always some kind of surprises. So, but I like the idea. If you do have room, and with MinSure, it's not a lot. I mean, I want to say it's like $65,000 or $85,000, something in that realm. And by the time you take maybe your Social Security and your dividends, because we're still getting a lot of higher dividends, 1099s. Do you remember the day when it used to be zero? We said, oh, we don't have to count any of those dividends for 1099s. Now people who had made 4% and 5% on their accounts, money markets, you know, that's a big number as a 1099 that comes in. So I highly suggest, like we do a mock tax return trying to figure out, you know, how much income we can raise in that MinSure class and keep their health benefits. Bruce?
Yeah, that's... That was really well explained. I want to take this just slightly off the topic a little bit, because it occurred to me, the question made me think of something that, Peg, I've actually had come up several times recently, including last week. And again, you can't even make this stuff up. Sometimes when people talk about doing Roth conversions or their taxable income, they get very focused on the tax bracket or the percentage tax they're going to have to pay. Rightfully so. We try to be tax efficient, and we try to do things that don't cause quote unquote bracket creep or move you into a higher bracket. But sometimes it's unavoidable. But I need to remind people, because people don't always understand this, we have a progressive income tax. So here's my example. Last week I'm sitting with clients that their adjusted gross income had been around $80,000 a year. That puts them in a 12% federal tax bracket. They had just inherited an IRA that they were going to have to take required minimum distributions off of to the tune of some $20,000 a year. Well, that raises their income to about $100,000. Well, the top of the 12% tax bracket for a married couple filing jointly is just under $97,000. Well, they knew that. So they were freaking out because now we're going to be in a 22% tax bracket. And I said, well, that's true, and maybe there's nothing we can do to avoid that, but you're only paying 22% on that $3,000 of income above the line. It doesn't go back to 22% on every dollar from dollar one that you made that year. So even though there was bracket creep, even though you're going to be in a higher bracket, the tax impact is really not going to be that significant. It's nothing to lose sleep over. And I wanted to bring that up because, surprisingly to me, a lot of people still don't understand that it's a progressive tax system. And we look at what is the net tax that you're going to pay. Denny?
Texter says this, I assume if you're still working at 73 and therefore not required to take required minimum distribution, that you were not assessed a penalty, correct?
This is one of those, Peg, where you have to not assume the premise of the question is accurate. Peg?
Well, if you're 73 and you're still working, there's two things. You might be contributing to a 401k or some type of plan within your employer, and then you may have IRAs outside of your work plan. So the one where you have the 401k at your work, you do not have to take distributions, but the ones that you have outside of that, at 73, you have to start taking required minimum distributions. Bruce, do you agree with me?
Yeah, that's what I meant by don't assume the premise of the question's right. Because they said the question like, well, I know that if I'm still working, I don't have to take a required minimum distribution. No, that may not be true. If you, like Peg said, if you have tax-deferred accounts other than just your company plan, you do have to take required minimum distribution. Doesn't matter if you're still working or not. Denny, do we have time for one more?
I think we do. This listener asked, we only owe $11,000 left on our house. Should we take the money out of our Roth or 401k or do nothing?
Oh, what a good question. Peg, what would you do? You almost got your mortgage paid off.
Yeah, I love debt-free, and you actually probably don't have a lot of interest on that $11,000. And if it were me, I would find a resource just to pay it off and then have that party that I suggest to everybody, because once you have your house paid off, it's such a fulfilling time frame. So I personally would probably just take the money out of somewhere and pay it off.
I agree with Peg, but again, where you take the money from might matter. So I think the texter said Roth IRA. So yeah, if it's something where there's no income tax liability, I like that. Or if it's a taxable account, maybe you've got a non-IRA or what we call a non-qualified money market or bank deposit account or CDs or something like that, and the interest rate's not super high anyway. To take that money, there's very little tax liability, and to pay off the debt, I like it. But I would not take it out of an IRA or a 401k or something where I'm going to be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. So I agree with Peg. It's close enough and small enough. Pay off the debt, eliminate the mortgage, but make sure you take the money from the smartest place. And Denny, I think we're about out of time, my friend.
I think we are indeed, and we hope you join us again next week. Let me give you a couple of numbers. If you want to get in touch with Wealth Enhancement Group, and keep in mind, you can call this number 24/7. If you think of a financial question midweek, let's say, here it is, 888-6-ADVICE. That's 888-6-ADVICE. If you prefer to email those questions, you can do that too. Just send your emails to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. We do hope you join us again next week with more of Your Money.